Tonight's video is a murder mystery of an individual named Artemis Ogletree in Kansas City, Missouri, who was found strangled, stabbed, and beaten beyond recognition to a point where he simply says he fell and later dies. Witness accounts and suspects are mentioned below to try to uncover the truth behind this unsolved mystery. Stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss tonight's story. If you're new to the channel, subscribe, click on that bell, and smash that thumbs up and tell a friend. Now let's get spooky. January 2nd, 1935. It was an early afternoon. The sun was high in the sky, and a soft breeze was blowing through the streets. The light shone in through the windows, casting a warm glow on the guests who milled about. Guests were coming and going at the Hotel President in Kansas City. Some of them were businessmen, families, or travelers. At one moment, the receptionist noticed a man walking in towards the desk. He was a young man and checked in under the name of Roland T. Owen. The man was well-dressed and did not have any bags. He was well-dressed in a dark coat and pants, with a white shirt and tie. His shoes were polished to a high shine. The one thing that marred his appearance was the scars on his temple and hands. "May I ask for a room several floors above? Only one night," he said, standing in front of the receptionist. The receptionist had the impression that the man might have been a boxer because of that scar. He was a tall man with broad shoulders, and he had a deep, commanding voice. Then the bellboy, Randolph Pabst, escorted the man up the room on the seventh floor. "You know, I am coming from the Muhlibic Hotel, and the prices are a bit high there," he said while walking down the long hallway. The man walked with a measured stride, his hands clasped in front of him. The bellboy could see the tightness around his mouth, as if he was holding something in check. The man's eyes were dark and unreadable. A few seconds later, the bellboy opened room 1046 for the guest and saw he took his comb, a brush, and toothpaste from his pocket. After checking the room and getting the keys, he and the bellboy came out, locking the room, and Roland left the hotel. The next person who met the man was the maid. Her name was Mary Soptic. She hesitantly opened his door and found Roland inside. "Come in, don't worry. You're not disturbing me," the man said, seeing the woman's reluctance. Mary nervously entered the room and started cleaning. However, she found it interesting that the shades were down. It was not totally dark as the bed lamp was still on, giving dim light in the room. Then Roland got up and went to the bathroom to brush his hair. "I am leaving for now, but I will be coming back later. Do not lock the door, please, because I am expecting guests," the man said, putting on his coat and leaving. Mary did as she was asked, and later returned to the room with some new towels. Surprisingly, it was dark inside, and Roland was lying in bed, fully dressed. Also, there was a message on his bedside table saying, "Don, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait." The next morning, Mary went back to the room to do some more cleaning. She saw the room was locked from the outside and thought Roland must have gone out somewhere and opened the door. To her surprise, the man was laying on his bed in the dark, talking on the phone. The sheets were rumpled and the comforter was askew, as if he had thrashed in his sleep. "No, Don, I don't want to eat. I am not hungry. I just had breakfast." "No, I am not hungry," he said. Still holding the phone, the man turned his head towards the woman. Are you responsible for the whole floor? The man asked. The woman nodded. How about the president? Is that residential? Anyways, I still can't wrap my head around those high prices over at the other hotel. A bit later, Mary was taking some fresh new towels to the room, but as she was approaching the door, she heard people talking inside.
Who is that? Roland asked.
I am a cleaner. You have some new towels.
We don't need any, another voice answered. Mary knew it was a lie to whoever had answered her, because there were no towels in the room, but she let it go. Two further witnesses, Jean Owen and her boyfriend, later reported hearing people talking all over the floor. It was also confirmed by elevator operator Charles Balcher, who was quite busy that night. Room 1055 was especially noisy as there was a party. I also remember a woman visiting several men. She was probably a prostitute. On one occasion, she complained about her client not being in room 1046. She said that the man had been one of her clients, but he never missed an appointment. Charles recalled later. According to Charles, this was with another man. Both of them had to be taken up or down by the elevator by the operator. The question is whether Roland was at the hotel during the evening or not. Then, even more strange things happened. A worker named Robert Lane was driving around the city, not far from the hotel president, where he noticed something odd. An underdressed and troubled man told him to stop. Robert stopped the car, hesitating.
Sorry, man, I thought you were a taxi. Could you take me to a taxi station?
Robert nodded and told the man to jump in. During the drive, the unknown man who had scars on him broke the silence.
You know, the person who did this to me will pay for this tomorrow.
Robert did not ask any further questions, but he supposed the man was seeking revenge. When Robert later identified the body, he confirmed that it was indeed the man who he had picked up earlier. The next day, Della Ferguson received a call from room 1046, requesting a wake-up call. But when she tried to make the call, she couldn't get through because the phone wasn't on the hook properly. She went up to the room and found that the door was locked and there was a Do Not Disturb sign on it. She knocked on the door and a voice from inside said,
"You could come in. Turn on the light."
But when she tried the handle, the door wouldn't open.
"You could come in. Turn on the light."
The voice repeated, but Della still could not enter. She called out,
"Put back the phone!"
and then left, thinking that the guest was probably drunk. A few minutes later, it was another bellboy, Harold Pike's turn to go to the room because the phone was still not on the hook. Fortunately, however, he had a key so he could enter the room. Inside, he found a man lying naked on the bed and the phone thrown over the floor. He placed it back and left the room. Later, the phone was not on the hook, and the other bellboy, Randolph Popst, went up to the room. After entering, he noticed Roland on his knees with a bloody head. There was blood on the bed, on the walls, and in the bathroom. Randall hurried down for help and called the police. They arrived with a doctor called Dr. Harold Flanders. Roland was already sitting on the edge of the bathtub. There was a cord around his neck, wrists, and legs as if someone had wanted to strangle him. Besides the strangling, there were stab wounds covering his chest and his skull was fractured. Strangely, there was also blood splatters on the ceiling.
"What the hell had just happened here?" Randolph asked, looking around. "Who had tried to kill you?"
Harold asked after cutting the cords around his neck.
"Nobody,"
in a raspy voice. How did you get these injuries then?
I had fallen and hit my head in the bathtub.
Did you try to commit suicide?
No,
the man replied. Then he was taken to the hospital, but fell unconscious and died there. The first suspect was Jean Owen, who was immediately questioned by the police. As she was not far from the victim, the police thought that she might have something to do with the man's death. But after her boyfriend confirmed her story that she had been shopping around and did not want to return to Lee's Summit, she was released. The doctor examined the body and the bloodstains and corroborated what Della and Randolph had seen. But what was really interesting was that none of Roland's clothing were found besides his necktie. The soap and towels were also missing in the bathroom. As for the traces, no knives were found. One glass was in the tub, missing a piece, and the other was on the shelf. The police also found some pins, an unsmoked cigarette, and a bottle of sulfuric acid. There were fingerprints on the phone, which belonged to a woman, but they matched none of the employees at the hotel. The police needed the help of the press in the hope of finding some clues. I have no doubt that someone else is involved in this case, Detective Johnson told the reporters. Concerning the man's identity, it became suspicious that he was not called Ronald T. Owen and used a fake name. The news of the death spread quickly and the media tried to eliminate all the useless tips. As the man had given Los Angeles his address, Kansas City police contacted LAPD. But nobody lived under that particular address and the name Nolan T. Owen. The police, however, remembered Randolph's report, according to which the man had booked a room at a different nearby hotel. The employees at the hotel were able to remember the man's look after seeing his photos, but he turned out to have used a different name, Eugene K. Scott. Again, LAPD did not find anybody living under the given address and with this name. There were two more people who claimed to recognize the body, but they both proved to be a mistake. Later, when the time and place of the funeral was announced, somebody called the funeral home. Please delay the funeral a bit. I would like to send some money to have a proper grave, and also want him to be buried near my sister, the voice said. Really? You'd better tell this to the police, the director told him. Yeah, I know, the voice replied. So tell me, why was he murdered? The director went further. Well, he was engaged to a woman while he was seeing another one. So the two women arranged a meeting in a hotel room to take revenge. Isn't that something that cheaters deserve? The caller said and hung up. And the money did arrive. The expenses of the funeral were covered, but the identity of the sender was unknown. But this did not end here. A similar phone call was made to a local florist, and flowers were brought to the funeral. A card was also attached to the flowers with the following message. Love you forever. Lois. Both calls were traced back and they had come from payphones. The police were watching the grave for a while in the hope of someone turning up, but nobody visited it. The mystery of the identity of the man finally was cracked. When a person named Ruby Ogletree in Birmingham, Alabama, identified the man based on his photo. He looked like his son, Artemis Ogletree, who was not seen by the family since he went to hitchhike to California in 1934. Ruby's correct identification was later confirmed, and she also said how her son had got those scars on his face. Oh, when he was a child, hot meal was spilt on his face accidentally, she said. Further bizarre things took place after Artemis's death. Ruby received letters. One came from Chicago and was written with a typewriter, even though Artemis could not use a typewriter. Two more letters came from New York, claiming that Artemis was going to Europe. Then a strange phone call came from Memphis. "Yeah, I knew Artemis. He saved my life, and he lives in Cairo, Egypt now. He is married to a rich woman but cannot write because he lost his fingers," the man said. Ruby was very doubtful about this call. He said ridiculous and nonsensical things. However, the identity of this person was later identified, but the police never revealed it. Neither were there traces that Artemis ever had gone to Cairo. A suspect called Joseph Martin was targeted by the police, as he had shared a room with the man who he had murdered and then sent his body to Memphis. Joseph also used the name Donald Kesso. His handwriting was matched with the letters sent to Ruby, but they did not match. Eventually, the police did not charge him. The case remains open, taken over by many detectives, but no evidence appeared. Around 2003, John Horner, who worked at a library in Kansas City, received a call from a person. "I am sorting out some items which belong to an old man who died. In his shoebox, I have found several newspaper articles concerning the Ogletree's case," the voice said, but the details of this lead was never investigated. So, what happened to Artemis? Was he the victim of a broken engagement? Or was he killed by the mafia? After all, the name Don is a popular title among mafia members. But we cannot be sure about what really happened in that hotel room.